Hello everyone, and welcome to dive into strategies to make education more effective for both teachers and students. I'm James.
And I'm Lisa. Today, we're tackling a topic that's fundamental to assessment and feedback but is often misunderstood: designing rubrics and clear success criteria.
Exactly, Lisa. At first glance, rubrics might seem like a dry, bureaucratic tool, but when done right, they're actually an incredibly powerful way to make learning visible, fair, and actionable.
Right. They're not just for grading, they can guide students, support self-evaluation, and even improve teaching. So, let's start by breaking down why clear success criteria matter in the first place.
Sure. First off, clear criteria make assessment fair. When students know what's expected of them and why, they're less likely to feel blindsided, and teachers are less likely to grade inconsistently or with bias.
Exactly. And fairness aside, they also make feedback more useful. Instead of just telling students they passed or didn't meet expectations, you can map feedback directly to the rubric, showing them what to improve and how.
Which ties into formative assessment, right? Using rubrics during the learning process, not just at the end, helps students track their progress and refine their work step by step.
Absolutely. And that builds metacognition. Students learn to evaluate their own work, set goals, and understand their strengths and weaknesses. It's a skill that goes beyond the classroom.
And let's not forget self-esteem. Transparent criteria reduce the anxiety of surprise grades and the perception of unfairness, which can really demotivate students.
Right. It's all about creating a sense of clarity and trust in the process. But let's get practical. What does a good rubric actually look like?
Good question. A well-designed rubric is clear, specific, and behavioral. For example, instead of saying good structure, you'd write something like, the introduction presents a thesis, each paragraph has a topic sentence and evidence, and transitions link ideas clearly.
That's so much more actionable. And even better, you can pair it with formative feedback, like, your organization is proficient. The thesis is clear, but you need stronger transitions between paragraphs. Try adding a linking sentence that shows how claim one leads to claim two.
I love that. It's constructive and gives students a clear next step. Speaking of which, rubrics can also include metacognitive elements, like planning, monitoring, and evaluating. These encourage students to think about how they approach their work.
Definitely. For instance, a rubric might ask students to reflect on their planning process, check their progress, or write about what they do differently next time. It's all about fostering self-regulation.
And you can co-construct rubrics with students to build ownership. For example, start by sharing an exemplar and asking, "What makes this work excellent? What would a weaker version look like?" Then, group their ideas into 3 to 4 criteria and formalize the language together.
That's such a great strategy. It not only makes expectations clear, but also socializes those expectations and boosts motivation. Students feel like they're part of the process, not just being judged.
Exactly. Now, Lisa, let's talk about using rubrics for formative versus summative purposes. How do those differ?
Good question. Formative use is all about growth. You might use a rubric to guide a draft, peer review, or self-assessment, leaving room for revision. Summative use, on the other hand, is for final grading, so it needs to be consistent and transparent, with clear grade boundaries.
And that consistency is key to fairness. Teachers should calibrate by scoring anchor pieces together, discussing differences, and refining rubric wording where necessary.
Exactly. But while rubrics are powerful, there are pitfalls to watch for. For example, vague descriptors like good or satisfactory don't help anyone. Instead, describe specific behaviors or outcomes.
And avoid overloading the rubric with too many criteria. Stick to 3 to 5 essentials, especially for middle or secondary students. It keeps things manageable and focused.
Right. Another common mistake is introducing the rubric too late. It should frame the lesson or assignment from the start, so students know what they're aiming for.
And don't use rubrics only for grading. They're most effective when used throughout the learning process, for drafts, peer feedback, and reflections.
Absolutely. And let's not forget exemplars. A well-annotated example can bring a rubric to life, showing students what each level of performance looks like.
So true. Before we wrap up, Lisa, what's one practical tip teachers can try this week to improve how they use rubrics?
I'd say start small. Take a recent assignment and draft a simple 3-4 criterion rubric that aligns directly with the learning goals. Introduce it to students before they begin, and use it for peer review or self-assessment.
Great advice. And after that, collect the rubric scores and see which criteria the class struggled with most. Use that to plan a short reteaching session or skills lab.
Perfect. At the end of the day, rubrics aren't just about grading, they're about growth. They help students aim higher, practice smarter, and improve continuously.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into designing rubrics and criteria. Until next time, keep teaching smarter, not harder.
Stay inspired and keep those learning goals clear.